Beloved Zorba the Buddha, when he first met Sakito, Hokoji asked, "Who is he that is independent of all things?" Before he could finish his question, Sakito covered Koji's mouth with his hand. At this, Koji underwent an experience and expressed himself in the following verse. "Daily, nothing particular, only nodding to myself. Nothing to choose, nothing to discard. No coming, no going. No person in purple. Blue mountains without a speck of dust. I exercise occult and subtle power, carrying water, shouldering firewood." Later, when he came to visit Matsu, Koji again asked, "Who is he that is independent of all things?" Matsu said, "When you have drunk all the water in the Yangtze River, I will tell you." At this, Koji underwent another great experience and composed a second verse. "The 10 directions converging, each learning to do nothing. This is the hall of Buddha's training. Mind is empty, all is finished."
Friends, one absolutely innocent man has been hanged yesterday morning. The High Court has no evidence against him, not even circumstantial evidence, not even technical, any loophole. But he was sentenced to death because he was the uncle of one of the terrorists who murdered Srimati Indira Gandhi. His only crime was to be the uncle of the man. One simply cannot believe that to be an uncle to a terrorist is enough to hang him. The Supreme Court rejected the appeal to reconsider without giving any evidence or any reasoning why they are rejecting the appeal. The President rejected the mercy appeal without giving any reason why he is rejecting the appeal. The attorney who was working hard to save this innocent man is my attorney also. I know him intimately. He has been fighting for me in many courts, in many cases. I know his honesty, integrity. His name is Ram Jethmalani. he tried hard in every possible way, that there is no evidence. You cannot murder an innocent man. But power is blind. And when blind power becomes revengeful, then it is absolutely destructive. I am not concerned that one man has been hanged. My concern is, as a citizen of this country, that hanging an innocent man is hanging justice itself, is hanging democracy, freedom of individuality, freedom of expression, even freedom to be innocent. And these politicians go on talking about justice and democracy, and under these beautiful names, everything corrupt, inhuman, goes on beautifully. Not a single intellectual, any single freedom lover, any single man who would like equal justice for all has raised any protest. Ram Jethmalani, as a final effort, approached the world court. The world court said that put me in contact with the president. The secretary of the president said it is too late. It was only 8:30 in the evening, and we cannot disturb the president at this late hour. And in the morning, the man will be hanged. When the man was hanged, Rajiv Gandhi was playing on the grounds as if nothing is happening. This country has been fighting for freedom, not for this freedom. It has been fighting for justice, not for this justice. Where you don't have any evidence of any kind, you are murdering the constitution of the country, its justice. You are destroying its freedom. And there is no protest. People are so conditioned to be slaves that when the whole country should have risen against this criminal act of the Supreme Court and the President of India, there is not even a single sign. It seems the whole country has been castrated. But I protest with my whole heart. In the first place, death itself is not a right way of punishment. even to the person who has murdered somebody. This is the law of the jungle. Eye for eye. It is not justice. The man has murdered somebody and you murder the man. Can blood wash your hands which are full of blood? And as far as talking is concerned, all the leaders, all the politicians go on talking about beautiful things, giving hope and consolation to the masses. But the fact is that there is no law, no constitution. If you can murder an innocent man, you can do anything and the country will remain silent. But I, as an individual alone, protest this murder of the innocent man. Secondly, all these few days I have been exposing Indian intelligence, but nobody seems to come forward and accept the truth. On the contrary, they become angry. Just today I have received from Amravati a newspaper editorial asking me that you are creating your own dictionary because I have explained the word Bhagwan as a pornographic word. But the stupid editor does not produce any other meaning of the word from any dictionary. I challenge anybody to produce any other meaning of the word bhag. It means vagina. And you can see at any nook and corner of every city the statue of Shivalinga. It is a phallic statue. It is man's genitals based in a feminine vagina. And the whole country goes on worshipping it. And nobody even wonders that what you are worshipping. You are not even ashamed. And Shiva is called by the Hindus not a small god, but Mahadeva, the great God. And the great God is represented by male genitals. I am not creating any dictionary. I am simply bringing to your notice the authentic meaning of the word. And if you are intelligent, from now onwards, nobody should be called Bhagwan. neither Mahavira, nor Buddha, nor Krishna, nor Rama, nobody should be called Bhagwan. It is abusive. It is ugly and obscene. I had carried that word before my name for 30 years just as a challenge, but nobody even came to challenge it. The pundits of this country, the priests of this country must have understood deep down in their hearts that if they challenge me, I am going to expose the meaning of the word. Now that I have denied even Gautam Buddha, for the simple reason, because I don't accept Gautam Buddha as a whole man. He has renounced the world. He has renounced the outer, and a man who is living only with the inner cannot be complete or perfect. Hence, I call myself Zorba the Buddha. But even that is hurting unintelligent people. They don't understand the meaning of Zorba. Even the Sri Lanka ambassador to America has written me a letter that I should not use the word Buddha with Zorba. It is insulting to Buddha. I wrote him, in the first place, you don't have any monopoly of the word Buddha. In the second place, anyone who is awakened has the right to call himself the Buddha. And my effort to bring Zorba and Buddha together is indicative of my whole philosophical approach. I want the world and your inner being to be in tune. The inner and the outer should be balanced. Zorba the Buddha is my philosophy. But if it hurts, I am helpless. But I would like my editors not to put it even behind my name. I don't want to irritate ignorant, blind, unintelligent people around the world. You are my only world. I am living just for you. I renounce the whole world completely. You should take note of it, Manisha, that Sri Rajneesh is enough to indicate towards me. As for you are concerned, you can address me as my beloved master. I have something important to do, not to bother about these idiots. They don't understand even their own scriptures. They are so ugly. They are so pornographic. But they have never read Shiv Puran or Vayu Puran. They don't know anything about their own religion. But they get hurt very easily. That shows their conditioned mind, and they have lost all capacity to understand anything new. I have invited Morarji Desai to the ashram. He has been cheating the owner of the Oceana building. Once I have been in that building with him, he has not been paying, but because he was sometimes chief minister of Bombay, sometimes chief minister of Gujarat, sometimes deputy Prime Minister of India, and finally he became the Prime Minister of India. So the building owner could not do anything about him. It was at his whim whether to pay him the rent or not. Once in a while he will pay. But now that he is no one, the man has dragged him to the court. And the court has decided in favor of the building owner. All his followers simply have deserted him. The people who has been making him chief minister and prime minister, where they have gone? All those chamchas It is a special Indian word. It means all those spoons who were sucking his blood. They have all disappeared. Not a single one has invited him to be with him in his house, and he had all the richest people of the country as his friends. They were surrounding him and praising him like anything. He has only 560 rupees in the bank account. And it is so humiliating that Bombay has collected 11,000 rupees for him to live for his whole life. But when I invited him, making it clear that in my campus, two conditions have to be fulfilled. You have to stop drinking urine. My people don't like such disgusting habit. And you have to come with a negative certificate one man H.V. Kamath, one of the oldest journalists, intellectual, immediately reacted and he gave an interview to a newspaper stating that I was going to write something good about Bhagwan, but because he has insulted Morarji Desai, now I am not going to write what I was going to write. It's strange. And yesterday I received his review about Zarathustra. That's what he was writing, something good about me. Now he was in an absolute confusion. He has written such absurd things just to be revengeful. And it has nothing to do with Zarathustra, the book. If he was angry at me, it was enough. He has shown his anger in the newspapers. But he writes about Zarathustra that it is contradictory, but he does not give any example. A single example would have been enough. It is inconsistence, but without any example. Just because H.V. Kamath says it is inconsistent or self-contradictory, it does not become self-contradictory or inconsistent. And he says that there are repetitions in the book. Yes, there are repetitions because it is not a written book. These are lectures running for months, and one has to understand that a written book has a different. One person is writing, he can cut, he can remove some passages if there is any tautology, any repetition. He can give the book to few people to look into if they find anything inconsistent. But these are spontaneous talks given to the disciples. And sometimes it is absolutely necessary to repeat few things again in a different context. They are not repetitions, because the context is different. But just in his own statement, he has made himself a fool, saying that I was going to write something good, and just because I have invited Morarji Desai with conditions, he became angry because Morarji Desai has made him international reporter based in Washington just to pay him respect. If he was so much offended, he could have invited him to his own house. Now he is hanging. The government has given him a house. First he refused because it is the opposition in power. He does not belong to this opposition party. To take refuge and support, he felt it undignified, and he was hoping that he has so many friends who will come to help him. Nobody has come to help him. Finally, he accepted. This is even more humiliating. Governments offered to him, until his death, he can occupy a certain bungalow. But that bungalow is already occupied by a woman who used to be the education minister in Chauhan's cabinet. Now she is no more the minister. But she insists not to vacate the bungalow. And there are no rules for government bungalows. So she is in a good position. At the most, government can ask her the rent. And she is willing to pay the rent. Now there is no way. So the government is searching another bungalow. If somebody can vacate for Morarji Desai, and he is hanging in the air. Still, by the courtesy of the owner of Oceana, he has extended that until you get another bungalow, you can stay a few months. Now, H.V. Kamath was going to write a beautiful press review on Zarathustra, but out of anger, he writes absolutely absurdities. I was simply amazed that nobody seems to understand the difference between reaction and response. You react with your old conditionings without ever giving a second thought to any new approach. Hence, I will be simply my own name. I hope nobody objects about it. Otherwise, I can manage without a name. I have to live with these blind and all kinds of idiots. But I am not living for them, they should know. I am living for only my people whose heart have melted with me. These few breaths that are left to be here on the earth, I have to devote to my own people. With the hope that they will use this opportunity to become aflame with joy and blissfulness, to find their roots into eternity, immortality, to become in their own right one with the cosmos, dancing with the stars and the flowers and the rivers and the oceans, Manisha has brought few beautiful sutras. First, a small biographical note. Hokoji, who was his family name, Koji was a title of respect for a lay student of Zen, first spent time with Sekito and then went to Matazu. He became enlightened and was one of Matazu's successors. Beloved master, when he first met Sekito, Hokoji asked, "Who is he that is independent of all things?" Before he could finish his question, Sekito covered Koji's mouth with his hand. At this, Koji underwent an experience and expressed himself in the following verse. What must have conspired? Koji was going to ask the question, who is that is independent of all things? Your innermost being, the witness. But it is not a word, it is an experience. That's why before he could finish his question, Sekito covered Koji's mouth with his hand. Don't ask such a question which cannot be answered. Don't ask such a question which can only be experienced. Go inwards, close your mouth and close your mind. Move into the space of no mind. This closing of the mouth was very symbolic. And Koji went through an experience and could not believe that such a simple act of a master can manage to ignite a fire within you. For the first time he saw his own no mind, the vast space of the inner being. It is as big as the outer sky. Otherwise there will be no balance between the outer and the inner. He expressed his experience in a verse. Daily, nothing particular, only nodding to myself, nothing to choose, nothing to discard, no coming, no going, no person in purple, blue mountains without a speck of dust, I exercise occult and subtle power, carrying water, soldering firewood. What he is saying is the experience of every meditator. Daily, nothing particular. These words are applicable to you. Nothing in particular, daily, only nodding to myself. When you see your being, when you see the vast sky, the freedom, the joy, the blissfulness, have you ever thought? You cannot say anything about it to anyone. You cannot say anything about it even to yourself. All that you can do is nod your head that yes, this is it. Nodding, not words. Only nodding to myself, nothing to choose, nothing to discard. That's what I mean by Zorba the Buddha. Nothing to choose. Buddha had chosen. He had chosen to escape from the world. He had chosen to leave his wife and child and old father. He had chosen to run away instead of encountering the world and facing the reality. It was a clear-cut choice against the world, against the material, in favor of the spiritual. A man of totality has nothing to choose. His life is a life of choicelessness. Nothing to choose, nothing to discard. They are two sides of the same coin. If you choose something, you will have to discard something. Nothing to choose, nothing to discard. No coming, no going. One simply is. No person in purple. Blue mountains, without a speck of dust, I exercise occult and subtle power, carrying water, soldering firewood. In ordinary life, Koji is saying, I am exercising what is called occult powers. In carrying water, I am being a witness, soldering firewood, I am a witness. And the moment you are a witness, you are in meditation. Whatever you are doing or not doing, it is irrelevant. Later, when he came to visit Matazu, Koji again asked, who is he that is independent of all things? Matazu said, when you have drunk all the water in the Yangtze River, I will tell you. At this, Koji underwent another great experience and composed a second verse. What again conspires? Matazu said, I will tell you, first you have to drink all the water in the Yangtze River, a vast river, It will take eternity for you to drink all the water. Matazu is saying, don't ask impossible things. You are asking the impossible thing which cannot be answered but only can be experienced. You are asking, who is he that is independent of all things? The witness. The mirror-like reflecting consciousness. But there is no way to make you understand just by words. You have to go through the experience of witnessing. That is the only way to dissolve the mystery. Otherwise, you can go on collecting answers from masters, from scriptures, from all around the world, but all that you will collect will be simply rubbish. Anybody else's experience is not going to be your experience. If you drink water, your thirst is quenched, not mine. I will have to drink water to quench my thirst. The experience is absolutely individual. He recognized the fact that he is asking an impossible question. It is not the master's fault that he is talking of an absurdity. When you have drunk all the water in the Yangtze River, I will tell you. Zen has a way of saying things which nobody else in the world has used. Rather than saying that you are asking me an impossible question, Matazu says, for him first to do something impossible, then come and ask me. If you can manage to drink all the water of the Yangtze River, I will manage the experience to be translated into words. Nothing is possible. Neither you can drink all the water of Yangtze immediately. Kozi understood and underwent another enlightening experience. He composed another verse. The 10 directions converging, each learning to do nothing. This is the hall of Buddha's training. Mind is empty, all is finished. At the very center of your being, 10 directions are converging. The whole universe is meeting within you. Each learning to do nothing. This is the hall of Buddha's training. The only thing to be learned is not to do anything, but just to be. Doing moves you. Doing, in the beginning at least, may take you away from witnessing. You may forget to witness. So in the beginning, just be silent, utterly immobile, as if dead. so that you can experience being in its purity. Once experienced, you can bring the same quality, the same grace, the same bliss to your actions in the ordinary life. Then there is no difference between meditation and life. Then whatever you are doing is your meditation. If you are not doing anything, that is your meditation, because all along 24 hours you are rooted in your being, you are luminous, your light, your fire is burning so high that there is no way to forget it. It is radiating all around you. Those who are perceptible, receptive, sensitive will experience your fire, your life, your song, your dance, even though you are not moving at all. All that is needed is mind should be empty. The ultimate experience is the experience of no mind. Mind is a faculty to work in the world. It has no way to reach to your very center, which is far away back. Mind cannot go backwards. It has no reverse gears. It can only go forward. You can take it to the mountains, to the stars, wherever you want, but you cannot take it to your own being. If you want to go to your own being, you will have to leave the mind. You will have to go alone. You will have to go in silence without thought. And once, just once you know what freedom, what joy, what eternity, what tremendous life burst forth in you as no mind is entered, the spring has come to you. Thousands of flowers of eternity blossom. You have come to know the master key which opens all the doors of all the mysteries of existence. But it is not to do anything with the mind or thinking. No thought, no mind, no choice. Just being silent, rooted in yourself, rejoicing, thrilled with the experience, overflowing with great benediction to the whole universe. This is the only religion I know of. All other religions are just fraud. Wrote Sunflower mirrored in a globe of rain hangs for one moment, never seen again. Sunflower mirrored in a globe of rain hangs for one moment, he is talking about the rainbow, not mentioning the name. Sun's hours, mirrored in a globe of rain, hangs for one moment, never seen again. Have you ever seen the same rainbow again? Such is our so-called mundane life. Just rainbows. The same stuff the dreams are made of. There is no need to abandon rainbows, enjoy. But know perfectly well, it is a momentary phenomenon. I wonder that the people like Gautam Buddha, Mahavira, and others have insisted that the quality of the outer world is just like the rainbows, dreams, and still they renounce it. Only one thing can be right. Either they understand exactly that the world is just a dream, then there is no point in renouncing it. Do you renounce every morning your dreams? You know they were dreams, it is finished. But on the one hand, they say this whole world is just like dreams, and on the other hand, they renounce and go through all kinds of austerities in renouncing it. Certainly, one thing is wrong. Either they don't understand what they are saying, that the world is just like rainbows. So what? Enjoy the rainbows. You need not escape from the rainbows. They are beautiful for the moment. While long and desire that they should be permanent. What is wrong in their being momentary? Just rejoice. When it rains, just dance in the rains. When I was a postgraduate student in the university, there was a small street only for deans of faculties, arts, commerce, science, and renowned professors of different subjects. It was a very silent, peaceful, with great trees, ancient trees. It used to be a special section for the British people. So the trees were very ancient, the bungalows beautiful. And the street ended, it did not go anywhere. Just after a mile of beautiful bungalows and high trees, there was suddenly a stop. You were facing a deep valley. The street was on top of a hill. Whenever it used to rain, I used to go on that street because there was no traffic. The last bungalow belonged to the Dean of Science, a certain Dr. Srivastava, he was very friendly with me. We used to discuss about someday a meeting between mysticism and physics, because he was a professor of physics and a world-renowned professor. But he has never seen me. He used to be in the university. When I used to go singing and dancing in the rain, and always I had to stop at the last bungalow. The last bungalow, his wife and his children, they always waited for me whenever there was rain. They were all standing on the veranda waiting for me. I waved them and they waved me. We were not introduced to each other. I did not know that they are the family of Professor Srivastava. But they thought that I must be mad. One day Professor Srivastava said to me that I wanted you to see my family before you leave the university. I said, I will come along whenever you want. He said, why not today? So he took me in his car and he phoned the family that I am bringing a special guest. And the family was waiting for the special guest. When they saw me, they all laughed and ran inside the house. Professor Srivastava was very much embarrassed. He said to me, forgive me, there seems to be some misunderstanding. I said, no, there is some understanding. He said, understanding? I said, this is your family. We are well acquainted. They think me mad, I think them mad. We wave each other. He said, you never told me. I said, I never knew that this is your family. He took me inside, he called everybody and he asked, why you are laughing? He said, we have been laughing for almost 2 years. This young man is strange, his wife said. Whenever it rains, he always comes singing, dancing, alone on the street. And he stops just in front of our bungalow and we wave each other. We are well acquainted in a way. We think he is mad and we know he thinks we are mad. Because why we should wait? We wait for hours. Dr. Srivastava said, it is strange. I was thinking to make you introduce to my family, but they know you better than me. Why you never told me? I said, I have been telling many professors to come along with me. It is such a joy. But they say it looks very embarrassing. If some students see, or some professors see, even our jobs can be at risk. You don't have to lose anything. And anyway, the whole university thinks that you are a stranger. You can afford, we cannot. That's why I did not say to you, and you are an old fellow, you may not like the idea. He said, I like the idea immensely, but I cannot come under rain, dancing. Even my family will think, my God, that young man has corrupted our father, our husband. I said, this is my whole business, to corrupt. This was the business of Socrates, to corrupt. This is my business also. Sun shower mirrored in a globe of rain hangs for one moment, never seen again. The poet is saying, just because it is momentary and you will never come across it again, there is no reason to abandon it. Rejoice in it. The moon, the sun, the rain, they are all so beautiful. There is no need to renounce anything. You should be centered in your being, then the whole world is yours. That's why I call my philosophy Zorba the Buddha. Zorba enjoyed everything of the outer world. He had no idea of the inner. He danced under rain. He danced on the beach in the full moon night. His boss was a thin, always suffering from headache, stomach ache, this or that. And he was a poor servant. One full moon night, Zorba went to his boss and said, boss, only one thing is wrong about you. You think too much. Just come along with me. And before the boss could have said no, he just pulled him towards the beach. It was absolutely silent. There was nobody on the beach in the middle of the night, the full moon showering. And Zorba started playing on his instrument and dancing and holding the hand of the boss. So the boss also has to dance, looking all around that nobody is watching. Finally, he got the message. It passed through Zorba's hand. His dance, his joy, his playing on the instrument, something happened to the boss. Zorba left him. He continued dancing. Zorba went back to the cottage, but the boss continued dancing. Early in the morning, Zorba came back and asked, now come back. Soon people will be awakening. The boss said, you have cured me of all my diseases. They were all mind created. You were right, I think too much. From now onwards, I will try not to think. I would like to see that space also which opens up when there is no thinking at all. Zorwa was not aware of the inner. He lived in the outer. It is perfectly good, but it is only half. Buddha lived in the inner. It is perfectly good, but it is only the half. I want to give you the whole, because to me the whole is the only holy. Everything else is profane. Manisa has asked, "Beloved Master, you spoke the other night of America, of its being bloodthirsty and destructive. What is the appeal of destruction over creation?" Manisa, the appeal of destruction over creation is very simple. Destruction needs no intelligence. Destruction needs no discipline. Destruction needs no education. Destruction needs no meditation, no love. Creation needs intelligence. It needs meditativeness. It needs love. Love in its purity. It needs the perceptivity of beauty. It needs the joy of creating something, maybe just a rose bush, or a painting, or a small poem. But creation needs your total being to be involved in it. It needs your whole consciousness to be dissolved in it. Destruction does not require anything of you. Even animals can destroy. Even insane people can destroy. Even retarded people can destroy. That is the appeal of destruction over creation. But it is ugly. When you are destroying something, you are also destroying yourself, remember. And when you are creating something, a song, a dance, you are creating also yourself. You are discovering new dimensions of your being. The more you create, the more closer you come to your being. The more closer to your potential, your flights into the open sky, that blissfulness is not available to the destructive person. Only the creator knows the Himalayan peaks of love, of bliss, of splendor, of truth, of beauty, of all that is good, of all that is God. It is time for Sardar Gurdayal Singh. It is afternoon at the Washington Zoo. Look at that one, says Martha. The one is staring at us through the bars. Does not he look intelligent? Yeah, says George. There is something quite strange about it. Yes, he looks like he understands every word we are saying, says Martha. Yeah. He walks on his hind legs too, observes George, and swings his arms. There, says Martha, he has got a peanut. Let us see what he does with it. My God, says George, would you believe it? He knows enough to take the shell off before he eats it, just like we do. That other one is a female, is not? Asks Martha. Just listen to her chatter at him. He does not seem to be paying much attention to her, though. She must be his mate, says George. They look a bit sad, does not they? Asks Martha. Yeah, they do, agrees George. I guess they wish they were in here with us gorillas. Paddy and Seamus are in town one day and go for lunch at a smart restaurant. They enjoy a typical Irish 7-course lunch, 6 beers and piece of cheese, and receive their bill. Paddy feels in his pockets for his wallet. Be Jesus, he says, I have left my money behind. Seamus, can you lend me some? Seamus fumbles in his own pockets and then looks up. Can you imagine that, Paddy? I have left my money behind too. He says, what are we going to do? A few minutes later, Paddy and Seamus reach the cashier's table, arguing loudly. Let me pay for this, says Paddy. No, demands Seamus. I want to pay. They argue for about 5 minutes in front of the embarrassed cashier, and then Paddy turns to him and says, look here, you don't mind who pays for this, do you? No, replies the cashier. It does not matter who pays for it. Well, in that case, says Paddy, waving from the door, you pay for it. The temperature of marriage. Wedding day, 100 degrees feverish. Jimmy, my own sweetie, sugar pie. Judy, my own darling, honey bunch. One day later, 50 degrees, hot. Jimmy, my own precious. Judy, my own love. 2 days later, 25 degrees, warm. Jimmy, dearest. Judy, dearie. 3 days later, 15 degrees, tepid. Jimmy, sweetheart. Judy, dear. 4 days later, 5 degrees, cool. Jimmy, Judith. Judy, James. 5 days later, 0 degrees. very cool, Jimmy, Madam, Judy, Sir, 6 days later, below freezing, I see Jimmy, bitch, Judy, bestal. On the 7th day, minus 20 degrees, very cold, Jimmy, get lost, pow, Judy, fuck you, press. 2 days after the storm, meltdown, Jimmy, ah, Judy, ah, ah, ah. Judy, ah, Jimmy, ah, ah, ah. Nivedhi. Close your eyes, feel your body to be completely frozen. This is the right moment to look inwards with your total consciousness and with an urgency as if this is the last moment of your life. Deeper and deeper, you are certain to reach to the center of your being. It is not far away. As you come closer to the center, everything becomes cool, calm, silent. As you come more closer, everything becomes joyful. As you reach the center, there is an explosion of light. Tremendous revolution takes place. You have found the eternal in you. I have been calling this eternal the witness. From life to life, since eternity, you have been going on and on, carrying only the witness. Everything, every life, you have to leave behind. Only the witness opens its wings and flies into another life. Ultimately, when you become enlightened, the same witness flies into the very source of life, disappears, melts down into the universe. This is nirvana. To disappear just like a dewdrop into the ocean. But for the moment, remember the witness. You have to live this witness 24 hours without any tension. Whenever you remember, okay. Whenever you forget, okay. Slowly, slowly, every moment will become a mirror, reflecting spontaneously the beauty of existence, outer and inner both. Nivedano, to make it more clear, relax, rest, but remember the witness. You are not the body, you are not the mind, you are just the witness. And suddenly, flowers start raining on you. A great ecstasy takes over as you relax. All separation disappears. Gautam the Buddha auditorium has become this moment just a lake of consciousness without any ripples, reflecting the far away stars. You are the most fortunate human beings at this moment upon the whole planet Earth, because you are at your center. This is the most precious, the greatest glory and splendor one can find in life, in existence. Collect as much joy, bliss, ecstasy, and persuade the center, the witness, to come along with you. The witness has to become your very life. That very moment you will be awakened, you will be the Buddha. Nivedano, come back, but peacefully, silently, gracefully. Sit down for a few moments, remembering the golden path you have traveled and reminding yourself that the experience of witnessing at the center of your being has to become your very life. Drawing water from the well, chopping wood, whatever you are doing, you have to remember that you are only a witness. Nothing has to be renounced, nothing has to be chosen. Choicelessly, relaxed, live both the sides of your being, the outer and the inner. Be Zorba the Buddha. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, my beloved master.